Hey cousins, you were listening to Revolutionary Hood Rat with Kim Young of Dope Black Social Worker, and welcome back. Well, we got some shit to talk about. But before we get into the Earth is Ghetto segment for this week, let's start with some revolutionary news, which goes out to Erica Anderson. The homie Erica Anderson, the founder of the Millennial Social Work Conference. Erica has been building something beautiful for the last 6 years in terms of building community amongst social workers of a younger demographic, social workers who are becoming the dominant demographic of the field, bringing folks to Atlanta, Georgia, to come together in community exchange and learn from each other, build memories with each other, do hood rat shit with each other. And I just want to shout out, lift up Erica Anderson, while also putting y'all on notice that you definitely need to figure out how you gonna pull up to the 6th annual Millennial Social Work Conference in Atlanta on March 7th through the 8th, 2025. I'm gonna stick this back in time. We going forward, Kim. Y'all need to make sure, because when I shared it online this past March, when, you know, me and Joy, the Joy of Social Work, finally had an opportunity to meet in person, and it was everything that I figured it would be, because we both just not weird. Like, we both just solid humans on the internet and off the internet. We had a chance to actually meet and be together for the first time at the Millennial Social Work Conference. And folks was like, what is this? I've never heard of this. How do I pull up to the Millennial Social Work Conference? So now y'all know. Y'all know the date to look out for. You know what it's called. It is Black Woman Founded, Black Led, just a visionary behind just phenomenal things for the field of social work and mental health advocacy, all of it. So the 6th annual Millennial Social Work Conference is in Atlanta, Georgia, March 7th and 8th of next year. Mark your calendars. Tap into their social media. You pay attention to the website for when early registration drops. The website is millennialswc.com. And Revolutionary News goes out to Erica Anderson for creating a container for us to literally show up and be our authentic Black brown selves together in this work. Swag surfing at a conference. My type of chaos and foolishness. I love it. And I hope to see as many cousins as possible in March at the conference. I also hope to see as many cousins as possible at brunch, the We Off Brunch Community and Hood Rat Joy brunch tour with Marvin Tolliver and Joy Britt and myself is coming to Philly on September 7, 2014 at Rec Philly. If you are interested in coming to spend some time with the cousins, build some community, feel some warmth, do some hood rat shit, hear from me, Marvin, and Joy collectively during our cousins chat, I highly encourage y'all to pop on over to weoffbrunch.com and snag you a ticket. Brunch is about to be phenomenal. We're going to be, you know, sipping Prosecco, you know, fine craft cocktails. There will also be some spirit-free options for those who are getting down that way, and just phenomenal food and good vibes and joy and hood rat activities. So I hope to see as many cousins as possible at the We Off Brunch on September 7th in Philadelphia. And you can visit weoffbrunch.com to snag you a ticket. So now that that is out the way, let's get into the Earth is Ghetto for the week. Y'all. I got vacation next week. I'm so excited. I'm going to New Orleans. And I think I'm going to commit to going to New Orleans at least once a year for a couple of different reasons, right? Like, I used to spend my summers when I was growing up, when I was a kid, in Louisiana. So not New Orleans, because my family would never let me go to New Orleans, but about 25, 30 minutes outside of New Orleans in St. Charles Parish. That's where I would spend my summers when I was a kid. So I think I probably told this story before. My mom used to put me on a plane from beautiful San Diego, California, and send me to Booty, Louisiana in the summer. And I would just be there for months. Whew. I'm grateful. I'm grateful for those opportunities, because I literally just got to be a kid, really know my family, and goddamn, right? But anyways, I think, like, the older I've become, and when I've kind of paid attention, I have been called to New Orleans in different ways over the last several years, of at least going one time a year. And I think I want to keep this up. Like, that city, It just feels good to the soul. Like my body responds well to New Orleans. Yes, humidity. Yes, the thunderstorms. Yes, the mosquitoes. Yes, all that shit. But my body responds well to New Orleans. And something about it just feels incredibly familiar. And it feels like I belong while I'm there. Now, could I stay in New Orleans permanently? Absolutely. Especially not in the city center, because that's just a different experience, especially when I know so much about the culture outside of the actual like touristy areas of just New Orleans and the surrounding parishes. But I'm going on vacation. A thug gonna be doing the most hood rat shit in the whole United States all next week. It is my best friend's birthday, who has never been to New Orleans before. I said, oh, say what? And say less. Like, tell your husband, watch them kids, and pull up. So we about to have a good ass, luxurious ass, hood rat ass time. Like, I want to go on a swamp tour. You know what I'm saying? Like, get the little Cajun baddies to come pick us up from New Orleans and take us out on a little swamp tour on the boat or whatever, trying to fuck around and see what them alligators talking about. Not for real though. They kind of got to stay where they at. I'm gonna stay where I'm at, and we just gonna, see how that go. I want to do me a little swamp tour. Of course, I'm gonna eat my way through the city. I'm gonna drink my way through the city. I'm also gonna hydrate my way through the city. I do know one of the reasons I have grown to truly love New Orleans, because it is the culinary experiences. And yo, it's like a cocktail city, maybe like even like one of the cocktail capitals of the United States. They even have this really big cocktail festival. I think it was maybe 2 weeks ago, where they bring bartenders from around the world to compete and exchange knowledge. And it's just a vibrant time in the city, but there are phenomenal bars throughout the entire city. And you can also get you a real daiquiri, not the type of daiquiri where you go through the, daiquiri shack drive-through and pick you up one of them diabetes laced long ass sugary ass drinks. Y'all, what if I told you that's not even a daiquiri? That shit is actually a disgrace. That stuff they be giving you in them long ass tubes are like Fat Tuesdays out the like icy machine. That shit is an absolute disgrace, and it's not a daiquiri. A daiquiri is actually one of the most common yet simple cocktails, and it is delicious when it's made with love and made with fresh ingredients. It is just some rum, some fresh lime juice, and some simple syrup shaken with love. That's it. And them three ingredients put together make a phenomenal cocktail. I didn't mean to go down a cocktail tangent, but y'all know how I feel about a fine craft cocktail. And I have a vision of a part of my retirement plan is to get me a little strip club that has a really phenomenal bar program and a nonprofit daycare. So if you think I don't be dibbling dabbling in the cocktail world, I definitely do. But I'll be on vacation next week, so that will also mean there will be no episode of Revolutionary Hood Rat, because I'm gonna actually be doing hood rat shit, and I'm gonna try my hardest. My friends be trying to talk shit about me, not trying. My friends do talk shit about me, because I will be, yeah, like I'll be doing hood rat shit, but I'll also be just talking to people. And sometimes I'll slip into the other aspects of my personality and trying to like do a little bit of community building, especially with service workers. It's pretty bad and hilarious at the same time. I don't know if y'all ever seen the Boondocks before, but there's that episode of the Boondocks where Granddad takes Riley, and Granddad takes the whole squad to the movies to go see a parody of Get Rich or Die Trying with 50 Cent. And by the end of it, Huey had organized with all of the service workers at the movie theater and got that shit shut down. There are times when I be doing that shit, like on vacation and with like service workers, but I'm gonna try not to do it and just lean into the full joy of just being free out in the world on vacation. So, speaking about some other joy, I just wrapped up my Tyler Perry marathon. If you weren't aware, I was on a full-blown Tyler Perry marathon. I watched all the movies, and I'm not ashamed about it. And I finished it, my marathon, with Why Did I Get Married? And no bullshit, I watched it twice. And I'm not ashamed, even though I'm whispering for no reason. I watched it twice. And every single time, Like, actually, the reason I wanted to watch it and watch it twice when I could have just went to YouTube, I just had to see Angela tell Marcus sitting at that table when, it was all discovered that he had VD and she passed the VD. He got it from Walter. When she just looked at him like, no, you got it from Walter. That scene gets me every single time. But y'all, Tyler Perry cannot act unless he playing Madea. I'll tell you that much. When he be trying to do other roles that are a bit more masculine, he'd be struggling real bad. He'd be struggling real bad. But the movies at the end of the day, they feel like warmth, they feel familiar, and they don't require me to think. And so I think that's why I was like, oh, let me just go on this Tyler Perry marathon. So I went through a fluctuation of emotions and experiences. Sometimes I was like, why the hell am I doing this? Some movies, y'all, they even had me crying. That one movie I could do bad by myself with Taraji P. Henson, where she take in her sister's three kids and the oldest daughter. Lord, she had me crying because I was like, there are far too many kids like this out in the world that just are parentified and assume all these roles and responsibilities as the head of their households when they can't even be kids. And there was like a line in the movie where she was like, when do I just get to be a kid? And I was like, oh, Lord, got me on the sofa crying, damn near bawling. But here's my ultimate lesson that I believe I received from my Tyler Perry marathon. And as we know, like, people talk shit about Tyler Perry all day long. Yes, the production of his movies are what they are. The wig quality is, Lord Jesus, it is just, it needs to, we need to call the main line for those wigs. The writing, whoo, I think AI is here, and I hope one day that Tyler Perry would consider it since he doesn't want to actually have a writer's room and allow people to help him. So we know all of these things, right? They're like challenges, but they're also the recipe to his success. Because at the end of the day, what I walked away from was create for the people that get it, and they will keep coming back. That's your community, that's your audience, do it for them. And so I apply that to my own life, right? Like, create for the people that get it. That is your audience. That's where you build community, and they will keep coming back. They will support you. They will hold you up. They will keep you going. And so it gets really easy to get distracted because content is always everywhere. People are always telling you what you should be doing, not do, how often to post and share and talk and blah, 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 and what to talk about and blah, 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 blah. And for me, I work really hard now. I struggled for, a while, maybe like 2 years ago, but I work really hard now to be grounded in doing the things that makes sense for me, that my community responds to, that I have an audience for, that I re receive support from, and they will keep coming back. And so Tyler Perry gave me that lesson after my 10-day Tyler Perry movie marathon. And if I was a TikTok celebrity, I would have did a whole little series about all of them Tyler Perry movies that I sat through, which I have no shame from. Absolutely no shame. I also do not have any shame for declaring that I'm a whole ass Black American. And what I mean by that is, like, there are these continuous conversations online. Some people are joking, some people may be serious, some people are just talking out the side of their neck about the upcoming presidential election. And if Trump wins, like, yo, we got to pack our bags. Where are we going? I'm getting up out of here. I'm telling y'all right now, my Black ass ain't going nowhere. I'm staying right here in America. I'm not joking about moving. I'm not joking about packing up my bags. I'm not joking about trying to escape. My Black ass is staying right here in America. Like, my people helped build this shit. My ancestors and my elders, they have sacrificed and worked far too hard for me not to know what love, joy, and rest feel like right here in America, where I have the ability to experience those things in spite of everything else. And beyond that, like, the more I travel outside of the country, the more I know just how much of a Black American I am. I'm very American. Like, I'm very Black American. And when you go outside of America, you receive these messages of, like, just how different. Yeah, there are some similarities with, our various cultures and subcultures. But also thinking about it, like, as a Black American, one of the biggest exports of my people is my culture. But it's really weird when you travel outside of the United States and people are like, trying to sell back your Black American culture to you or switch out of their culture into your culture to try to relate to you. And you just be like, oh no, like I could have just stayed at home if I wanted that shit. Like you didn't have to do all that because I'm over here. Like I'm trying to see what y'all talking about. I'm not trying to get more of the same shit I left that I'm getting a vacation for. I'm trying to get something new. But like I have no desire. I have no desire to leave the United States of America. If Trump win, if he don't win, whatever the fuck happened, I'm not going anywhere. And I really wish that more people would really start to understand their, national, racial, and ethnic identities and accept the fact, like, yeah, it's some real bullshit going on here, but sometimes you gotta boil it down to a really simple logic of, am I just gonna swap out one plantation for another plantation? Am I gonna swap out, a set of oppression for another set of oppression? Because that's really just what's gonna happen if you pick up and go other places. It's not gonna be a paradise. Can you make whatever a better life for you looks like? Yeah, like that's always possible, depending on how you're moving and what you're seeking and how much of your own work you have done, right? Like people who are avoiding or practicing escapism, if you just leave with the same bullshit, internal bullshit, pick up your shit and go to a different country, that same internal bullshit gonna land with you in that new country, like wherever you decide to go. And so for me, regardless of what happens with this presidential election, a thug ain't going nowhere. Nowhere. I'm not giving up my American citizenship for nobody or nothing. Like I had said online, I'm not Tina Turner. I'm not giving my shit up. Like I'm a Black American and I'm damn proud of it. Like my culture is beautiful, my people are beautiful, the contributions that we have made and continue to make are beautiful. I'm not leaving this shit behind. Like I'm as much American as anybody else with different, identities and experiences. And so can't nobody take that from me. And I hope that people understand they can't take that shit from you either, nor should you be so easy. Like just so willing to just give it up so easy. Really got to sit with that and figure out what that's about. Like if you're trying to escape America, thinking that like you'll be able to escape oppression, you won't, because colonialism and imperialism is everywhere. And racism and systemic oppression are byproducts of colonialism and imperialism. So you're just gonna swap out another plantation for a different plantation. Yeah, they may have organic vegetables at this new plantation instead of processed vegetables at the plantation you're leaving, but they also still got the same bullshit. And so you got to be really aware about yourself when you're thinking about that. Another person, a person who is very aware of himself, but also just owns some bullshit. I don't know if anybody had a chance to tune in to Trump, who was on. He attended and spoke at the National Association of Black Journalists. I had to watch it because I was like, this is interesting, right? And so it's an audience full of Black folks in journalism who, and then it was also a panel of Black journalists who were feeding questions to Trump. Y'all, he is a babbling fool. A babbling fool. Like, I don't know any other way to really put it right now. He made absolutely no sense. And in some ways, he reminds me of some of the geriatric patients when I used to work in the psych hospital, just talking. And you just be like, as you kind of plucking away on your keyboard, just trying to get the electronic health record updated, just plucking away, and it just be just babbling. Like, woman, like, what is you talking about? And sometimes I wish that people who are interviewing Trump or engaging or attempting to, well, actually, he can't be in conversation with anybody. So let's just get that out the way. But anybody who was like interviewing Trump, I really wish they would just talk to him the way he talked instead of like trying to ask constructive questions or just questions that make sense, because he's not going to give you an answer that makes sense. So I feel like you need to just be asking him questions that don't make sense, and then maybe he'll make sense. I don't fucking know, but it's like a conundrum. He's a babbling fool. A babbling fool. And so these next 4 months, they are really, I can definitely see how people are just, their nervous systems are overwhelmed. loaded with just the overconsumption of all this election bullshit. And I'm really hoping that people are caring for themselves, that they're logging out of apps, that they're not continuously watching cable news. I remember the days when there was no cable news. I remember when the news used to go to hell off, when the news was not on TV all the time, when the news was not accessible on the computer, on a phone, none of this shit, y'all. Hell, I remember when TV used to go off, cable would go off at night. So what you have to do, take your ass to sleep or pop in a VHS or try to watch something on TV through the scrambling bullshit that was on the TV screen. But just this overconsumption and access to information is really, really messing people up. And so I do hope that folks are centering their own care and understanding that you could receive so much information when none of the shit makes any sense. And so at some point, you gotta close down that just like portal to the information, like cap it off. Like, oh, that's enough for the week. That's enough for the day. Cause at the, you know, you can pop back in. It's like the Young and the Restless. You cannot watch that shit for 10 years, pop back in and know exactly what the hell going on with Victor in Genoa City. Like it never fails. The news is lightweight the same way, especially the cable news format, because they set the TV up, they set cable news up to be more like entertainment than actual reporting. And so just y'all tap in. Tap out of the bullshit, tap in and tap out of the mumbling nonsense. Please, please. I'm not gonna beg you, but just please, y'all. You know who else? Actually, I may have to beg her, but I'm also saying please to Kamala. Like, I want our beloved, I want sis to figure out these pantsuits. And yes, before you be like, oh no, like just because she's a woman, we talk about the way she looked. We talk about the way everybody look and dress. Like, keep it a buck. Stop the bullshit. So yes, it does matter. What she dress, how she carry herself, that shit matters. Y'all can pretend like it doesn't matter. Half of politics is about popularity. Half of that other, you know, that's so yes, it matters what she is wearing. And these pantsuits are driving me up the wall. I really need her to get like Miranda Presley on the line. Call somebody. Hell, the councilwoman in my district. Cynthia Newbill, look her up if you want to. In the 7th District of Richmond, Virginia. Listen, I've never seen this woman outside of a pantsuit. It could be 127 degrees outside. She gonna have on a leisure pantsuit, but that it's gonna be laid, right? Crease, it's gonna be laid. So I really want Kamala just to, you know, Kamala, excuse me. I want Kamala to just and her team, let's just put a little more effort, you know, a bit more effort into these pantsuits, switch it up a bit. You know, you don't always gotta be a straight leg pantsuit. It can you can give us a little boot cut, a little bell, a little palazzo. Give us, you know, a double breasted, single breasted blazer. There are just some things we could play around with, some prints and patterns a little bit with shirts and just something. You know what I'm saying? And I know she love a good Chuck Taylor. They make different ones then the classic cut. And so maybe as we just kind of go along in this process, we'll start to see some shifts and some changes. But get Dapper Dan on the line, get somebody on the line, and let's just kind of rotate, you know, sis out of these, what is it, like blue pantsuit, black pantsuit, and like a purple one or something. Let's kind of rotate through in gray. Let's, you know, there are just so many other colors and opportunities. And I feel like the internet, yeah, they gonna drag her or whatever, but the majority of folks might just be on her side because finally. You know what I'm saying? Finally. So y'all, I did something really cool that was good for my heart and good for my spirit this past Sunday. So as y'all know, like July, I don't like the word minority, but that's just what the people call the month. But July is Minority Mental Health Awareness Month, which is really designed to kind of increase folks' awareness of the struggles and challenges that folk, you know, people with minoritized identities experience in this country. And so I was able to host a dinner for Black and Brown mental health professionals. So there were just 10 of us total. It was a three-course meal, able to sit around, come together, be connect, but also like exchange and share. Because one of the things that I have been struggling with immensely since moving to the South is just the incredible segregation. Like it's literally like you over there, me over here. And there's rarely opportunities for coming together and sharing cultures, building community, and building trust that I have been able to just kind of find here in the South. And so me being, connected to the mental health community in my region, I've accumulated relationships across different identities for over the last decade. And so being able to bring folks together to support each other, learn from each other, break bread together, like, yo, my heart was so absolutely filled, especially knowing that, Black and Brown folks that are mental health in the mental health field are dealing with the same bullshit as the clients that we're serving that share the identities and experiences that we have. And so a lot of people just don't really pay attention to it and just be thinking like Black and Brown therapists are out here good. And that's just not true. Like Black and Brown therapists are out here suffering the same way the clients are out here suffering. And so when you really think about it, like the pandemic really exacerbated a lot of it. And so you got a lot of folks that are in the field that have definitely left it. They are beyond burnt out. Like they are just to a crisp. Like they can't even function anymore and just have, disconnected from the work, disconnected from their bodies, it's disconnected from their purposes and their missions, and just out here in the world floating with no direction. And so just kind of watching this change in a profession and a field that I care so much for, but then also being able to, hold some space and bring some folks together really warmed my heart. And it also affirmed for me that one of my greatest gifts is to connect. I'm really good at connecting with people, and I don't ever want to lose that. I don't ever want to lose the fact that I'm really good at bridging and connecting and bringing people together, then for them to decide like what you want to do with that relationship after the fact. And so being able to host that dinner for Black and Brown mental health professionals has also inspired me to want to make them regular, right? Like, how do we do this again to then strengthen our community, build more trust with our community? Cause we already know how this go in this field. Like people be trying to ask you all the time, where can I find a resource book so that I know how to access this, that, and the third? Everybody in the work know your resource book is in your head. Your resource book are the relationships that you have built over the years you've been doing the work. And so it is so much easier to pick up a phone and call somebody when you need to get access to a shelter bed, a hospital bed, get somebody in for an appointment, whatever it might be, than it is to like go through a resource manual and, try to call people you have no relationship with. And so the more we're able to be together in a room together, build relationship and trust with each other, it makes it really easy to just pick up that phone and be like, hey, I'm trying to get access to this, that, and the third. Can you help me with that? Or do you know who can? And so I want to be able to do more of these dinners because I feel like they are critical for the care of those that are engaging in this work, especially in my community in the Richmond region. And so I'm excited. I'm so excited to see what can come for that from that, and excited to figure out how I'm gonna get some sponsorships because I had to come out of pocket for that. I'm grateful for it, but baby, like, we gotta find some money to keep these dinners going. And so I'm going to stop there and go ahead and get into the tales from the trap for the week. And so, tales from the trap for the week. I want to share the story of the day I remember that I began the process of sacrificing my ego, right? Like I've talked about this a couple of different times and really sitting with the question for a few years now, like, what do I gain by sacrificing or letting my ego go? And what you gain is limitless. Like I could talk about the benefits all day long of what one can gain by sacrificing their ego instead of trying to fight to keep something that does not serve you and it harms yourself and other people. But I want to talk about the day where I really remember and recall like when this journey of sacrificing my ego began. And so it had to be the summer of 2018. I was working at this camp, which brought together high schoolers from various, racial, cultural, economic, backgrounds, religion, spiritual, gender, everything. So you can kind of think about it like a diversity camp. Like it brought kids from all over together in the middle of far away from civilization. Like I had never been to this part of Virginia in my whole life, so far away from civilization. For context, the kids that typically come to this camp are kids that go either to like private schools or highly resourced schools in surrounding counties and cities across Virginia. I, at the time, was working in a court-mandated program with young people in the city of Richmond. I had the genius idea of like, yo, why can't these kids go to this camp? I'm laughing now because, you know, some shit definitely went down, but we all came back safe. But I was like, why can't these kids go to this camp? So I was working with young people who had court involvements. They were actively on probation. And they were put into this program with the hopes of, like, if you complete it successfully, you'll be released from probation. Either your charges will be dismissed or you'll just, you know, kind of be able to go about your life with a reduced sentence of misdemeanors instead of some felonies. So, anyways, I'm in this program. I have this brilliant idea of like, how do I get my kids to go to this camp too? End up navigating it with my colleagues who are my co-accomplice to this day, who was able to get it approved. Bet me and the kids, we coming from Richmond all the way to the boonies, about 4 hours outside of Richmond, to go be at this camp with these kids from private schools all over the Commonwealth. And so we're at the camp, you know, my kids are doing the best they can in a new environment. Yes, did some bring black and miles? Absolutely. Did somebody get sent home for violating the rules? Absolutely. Did they still have a phenomenal experience? Did they cry? Did they feel? Did they have a healing opportunity? Did they connect with other young people from various backgrounds? Did they play outside? Did they wake up early? Did they follow routine? Yes. Yes. It was such a phenomenal experience for me and to witness them literally trust. I'm talking about kids who, like, that's just not the things that they do is trust and try. And so that was dope as hell. But the story is not even about the kids that I accompanied to the camp. It's about some of the kids that I had an opportunity to engage with. So, like I mentioned, it was 2018. And one of the activities that we do at the camp when it first starts is, you know, everybody makes their name tag. And, you know, you decorate it however you would like to say, decorate it. And you also identify pronouns, information about yourself. You could draw little pictures, whatever it is, right? So everybody has these really large self-decorated name tags with their name. And for some of the young people, it's a chosen name that, like, their parents or, you know, school systems don't recognize, but, like, it's a name that they identify with and they would like to be called, as well as their pronouns. And so I remember one of the young people at the camp, it might have been maybe the first night of the camp or the something like that, but one of the young people at the camp, they had did something like in support of somebody else or did something where I just wanted to acknowledge them, and I misgendered the young person and the in front of maybe like another peer and maybe another staff that was younger than me at the time. Yeah, it was. It was one of their peers and a staff that was younger than me. And I misgendered a young person. And the young person corrected me, right? Like, imagine that some adults in this moment, or just humans in this moment, how we could become defensive or want to just become overly apologetic. Like, oh my God, I didn't mean to do it. Oh, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. I'm sorry. I literally just said, like, thank you so much for correcting me. That was all I said because I was completely grateful that that young person saw fit to stand, you know, stand up for themselves. That that young person saw fit to be like, oh no, like, I'm not taking this shit. Like, you got it wrong and you need to get, like, I deserve for you to get it right. And so I was just like, thank you for correcting me. And I it didn't seem big to me at the time, but it come to find out it was a huge moment for that young person, which then ended up being a huge moment for me. So it's the last day of camp. We do like this closing ceremony that just breaks everybody's emotions down. When I tell you, boo-hoo, crying. The toughest kid in the whole United States can come and go and try to go through this process. They're gonna boo-hoo and break down and cry. But anyways, like we get through that process and the kids are loading up to get on the bus. And this baby comes to me, tearful and crying. It's just like, I just want to thank you for listening to me. Like, thank you for not, like getting defensive and just like respecting me and listening to me. And I was like, oh, like here, I'm getting ready to start breaking down, crying again. Like absolutely. Like you deserve all of that. Like adults get it wrong. Like people get it wrong, and we should be able to be corrected and be grateful when others correct us. I was like, absolutely. But I didn't know at that time what was happening for me. So in 2018, let me see, like how old is Kim in 2018? Let me see. What? I am 20. I know I can't count. Let me see. In there we go. I think I'm like, I don't know, maybe 26 or 27, some shit. I don't know. I'm 30. Wait, it's embarrassing. Yeah, I'm 30. I'm like 30 in 2000 and in 18. And still, going through my ebbs and flows of my own. Actually, I wasn't embarrassed for not being able to count. I'm not good with numbers. It is what the fuck it is. I have calculators and I do my best. But anyways, like I'm still 30. I'm learning, figuring myself out, figuring out what it means to relate and be in community with young people, figuring out what it means to respect and value young people as, full autonomous beings and not property or anything that somebody owns. And so I didn't recognize how significant it was for me, but also like, yo, that was the moment, because I had never had that experience before. It is very likely that, Kim before 2018 would have like had moments of like immediately, even if I wouldn't have said it out loud, my mind would have went through, how do I defend this? Instead of like, how do I accept, yeah, I got it wrong. Let me thank this person for letting me know I got this wrong, because they deserve that. And so that was the moment when I really began this journey of unknowingly sacrificing my ego and acknowledging the harm that I have caused, intentional, unintentional, whatever it may be, throughout the course of my career. But also, it is in my power to do no harm, do less harm, right? Like it is in my power to do that. And I have a responsibility to do that. But one of the only ways I was able to get there was by honestly letting my ego go and believing that like I get things right all the time, that my opinion, decisions, thoughts mean more than anyone else's opinions, decisions, and thoughts, believing and in struggling with this idea that multiple truths exist. Like, yeah, I could believe in something and all these other things can be true as well. And being able to work through that, but also like having a young person invite me into that journey. Like, I will never forget that kid, to the point where I saw them maybe like 2 years ago or so at their job. And I was like, yo. Like I remember you, and like I'm still so grateful for you. And I will always encourage adults, especially adults that have young people in their orbit. You have a responsibility of working to sacrifice your ego. It serves no one, you included. It serves no one. And it really requires you to sit with the questions of like, what are you trying to protect by holding on to it? And I bet you won't be able to come up with things that make sense, or like things that land on you in a healthy way when you start to think about, what am I trying to protect by holding on to my ego? Like, how is holding on to my ego serving me and others? How is holding on to my ego helping my relationships with myself and others? You gain so much by just letting that shit go. You will gain like this type of freedom and liberation you never met before by just letting that shit go. you're wrong a lot of the times, right? Like we get shit wrong a lot of the time. We don't know everything a lot of the times. People are going to do what they want to do a lot of the times, and that's not your responsibility to say shit to them all the time. Yeah, you could be knowing what you know, but like that's their life. That's their decisions if they want to do it that way, and it still happens. Yeah, we know that like 2 plus 2 equals 4, but so does 3 plus 1. Look, I did math. Go me. Right? Like there are other ways to get to the same solution. Just let people figure the shit out. You don't always got to say something or prove a point or defend yourself when you have caused harm and people rightfully correct you. Even if they're 2 years old, even if they say, I don't like that. I don't want to eat that. I don't want to go there. I don't want to do that. We need to respect it. Even as big ass adults, we gotta respect it, y'all. So that is my tales from the trap this week, is beginning my journey into sacrificing my ego. And I'm still on it. It's a lifelong journey. I'll never, get to whatever the resolve is. Just like healing, you never get to the ED. You never get healed. Healing is a lifelong journey. One of my vows that I take for in terms of my meditation in the morning is about like, we talk about enlightenment, get into nirvana, thinking about like, it's this ultimate place of achievement or resolve that we all can get to if we live this certain lifestyle and follow these eightfold paths. And the truth is like, you are the path, like you're already doing the work and that you are your own path, right? So like everybody's path is their own shit. You're already doing the work on whatever, or we would hope that you're doing the work on whatever your pathway is, and you'll get there wherever there is for you. And so I'm going to stop right there and I'm going to move into a good Black word for the week. All right. So the good Black word for the week, it really stems from the conversations that were had during this Black and Brown Mental Health Professionals dinner that I mentioned I hosted. And one of the things that resonated from my time together with those beautiful souls is this question around like, how do we actually become humans being instead of humans doing? Like we call ourselves human beings, and that's just false. Like the vast majority of us are not being. We're all out here just doing a whole bunch of shit, constantly moving, constantly in motion. And how do we actually become human beings? And how, in many ways, these systems and structures of oppression make it incredibly difficult for us to be human beings because these systems and structures require us to be human doings, right? And so I'm asking the question that I do not have an answer to, but a question that is important because if we're not aware of the fact that we are doing more doing than being, then it can really get us down into this rabbit hole where we get back to what I talked about last week of doing more looking and not enough living because we're so wrapped up in just doing all the time. Especially folks who come from various backgrounds, if it's, poverty, different minoritized and marginalized identities, like doing is what we know because doing has helped us survive. But we've, y'all have heard this shit before. We deserve more than just to survive. Like, that's not fair. I don't think that's why we're here, is just to be out here trying to survive all the time and do all the time. Where's the joy and the humility in that? And so really being able to sit with this question about like, how do I actually become a human being instead of a human doing is a shift in our thinking. It's a true shift in our thinking. And for me, like I really want to be a human being. I don't want to do all this doing. Yeah, like a certain level of doing is required because I can't opt out of capitalism, like I've talked about before. But I don't have to, and I will not be doing a whole bunch of doing. Like, fuck all that. I'm not doing a whole bunch of doing, and I don't feel guilty about not doing a whole bunch of doing. I really don't. If I have it to give, I give it. If I don't have to have it to give, I don't give it. But I communicate either way. And I'm honest. I don't make up no elaborate story about when I don't want to do something, when I don't want to go somewhere, when I can't show up, or when I can't, turn in X, Y, and Z. I'm not making up no elaborate story about that shit. I don't got it to give. I'm tired. I need today to rest. You give me the day to rest, I'll give you everything you need the next day, right? So like, you don't got to make up no elaborate stories when you just want to reclaim some time to rest. And if that's like what I did, go through a whole Tyler Perry marathon, I felt like the biggest human doing, I mean human being, when I was having my little, Tyler Perry marathon. And so I want to leave y'all with the question around like, how do you actually become a human being instead of a human doing? How do you get to a place of more being and less doing? Because the moment you accept that no matter how much you do, there will always be more, the better off you will be. It does not matter how much you do, because how much you do, there will always be more. Always be more. Remember that. And so that is one of the shifts in my thinking that allows me to do more being and less doing, because it does not matter how much I do, there will always be more. And the more is not always my responsibility. And I'm cool with that. I'm cool with that. And so I'm gonna leave it there, y'all. I'm gonna leave it right there. Thank y'all, as always, for showing up for me, showing up for yourselves. And please remember to take care of each other so that we, I mean, take care of your heart, excuse me, so that we can take care of each other. And we will chat when I get back from doing hood rat things with my friends. And y'all be